Why so down in the dumps?
Life. She is a beach.
Aw, what do you mean?
My special summer at the seashore. Soon I will have to go. How cruel. Oh, life, it is a beach.
Dude, you're totally right. Life is a beach.
Uh-huh. So you agree with me? Life is
a beach. But a different beach, man. I'm talking about a beach you can take home with you when vacation's over. I'm talking about cool summer stuff from our favorite bath and body shop, Bubble Genius.
But what is this beach you speak of?
It's true. Bubble Genius makes all kinds of cool beachy stuff, like Life's a Beach Summer Soap Collection and Salt Scrub. That stuff rules. It softens summer skin and leaves you with the lightest scent of salty seashores. So even when the vacation's over, you can still be there.
Fantastico! So even when I leave, life will still be a beach.
Exactly, dude!
Quel fantastic. With Bubble Genius, my friend. Life is a beach!
BubbleGenius.com
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look. The plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know?
It's what they use to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why do they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Pleasure is just a click away with radio as your guest. There's no quicker way, so click away. Radio does the rest.
Behold, the ideal killing machine. I call this little number Bane. Bane of humanity. Imagine it, your own private army made up of thousands of these super soldiers. Bidding begins at a mere 10 million. Turbo, show off for daddy.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It's Thursday. I don't know what the hell date it is. It's the 19th, 2012. It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. So you saw the Fox News Channel thing, Chez, right? The screen grab where they did a story about how pollution is actually helping plants.
Oh, yeah. I just saw the screen grab. I didn't read too much into the story. I never do. I don't pay attention to Fox News.
Well, that's all you got to know.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. I mean, all you need to know is that they thought pollution is helping. It's helping the trees.
No, it's just, you know how it is. You know how they think.
Well, I mean, the science behind it is initially nitrogen helps plants grow, but then the pollution that delivers the nitrogen actually kills the plants.
Well, of course. These are people who don't really subscribe to science, so it doesn't much matter anyway.
You just look at this stuff and it's confounding. It really is, and the deception and the just the ability to exploit the stupidity of its own audience is what it's ongoingly fascinating to me with Fox News Channel and AM talk radio.
Well, it's not just exploiting the stupidity; it's perpetuating the stupidity. It's enabling and amplifying the stupidity.
Yeah, that's right. So it's sort of a perpetual motion machine where
right.
not only does it pander to the stupidity of the audience, but it actually increases the stupidity of the audience.
Yeah. Fox News is like they're like a crack dealer. You know, they keep feeding the audience, knowing that the audience will become more and more addicted to it and have to come back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they've done is and we've talked about this a lot before, I don't want to get too deeply into it, but, you know, they've circled the wagons and they've closed themselves off. It's like they've walled themselves off into this little bubble of self-vindicating ridiculousness.
Yes, white middle class resentment, white middle American resentment.
That's right. Anyway, big show this week, and the Idiocracy thing. I mean, it's really it was really prophetic in terms of knowing exactly where the country's politics were headed.
It's not a great movie. I mean, it really isn't. Not. But it was. First of all, the opening sequence is one of the best, pretty much ever. Yeah. Just brilliant. And you don't have to be a genius to see where things have been going. But yeah, by kind of just putting it all out there and taking it to its most extreme comical conclusion, it's not a great movie, but it's a pretty it's worth seeing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think it's
lasting as a cultural artifact.
It's like a lot of the Will Ferrell movies. There are a lot of great quotable scenes in them, but as a whole, they're basically just an assembly of scenes.
Yeah, that's it exactly.
But the big story this week is Mitt Romney's tax returns and whether or not he was the CEO of Bain when he says he was the CEO of Bain or when he wasn't the CEO of Bain. There was a C-SPAN clip that popped up today in which I think it was from 2001 at some panel event, some sort of corporate event, where he's introduced by the moderator as the CEO of Bain. Mm. And so it's becoming really obvious now, and this I'm not breaking any news with this, that the reason he's been so deceptive and secretive about his Bain whereabouts, and to a certain extent his tax returns, because his tax returns will show us whether or not he was receiving a paycheck from Bain, which we kind of know he was. But I think on his financial disclosure forms, which he signed under the threat of perjury in order to run for president, he didn't include that information. And so, you know, there's a possibility that he could have perjured himself on his financial disclosure forms. That's the, I think that's the big legal conundrum, but then there's all sorts of mendacity issues that go along with that.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I don't jump to that conclusion like when the Obama aide or advisor or whomever it was who said, you know, that he may have committed a felony. I'm sure it's possible, but I'm not getting into that. I don't even need to go that far right now. To me, it's just the lying. You know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he perjured himself. That's coming from Romney. I really wouldn't be shocked. But right now, I'm content to just sit and accept the fact that the motherfucker can't do anything but lie. He has to. I mean, it's just constant lying.
It's lying, but I mean, I think more importantly than the lying, because I mean the lying has so far been extraordinarily well documented. What we're seeing here are the Republicans nominating someone, putting forth someone who, by all accounts, represents everything that caused the recession. I mean, he's like a poster boy for all of
that. And the thing is, they know that. That's the best part of it. They know that.
Yeah.
That's the reason why they dislike him so much, because they absolutely know that he's a loser. When it, you know, at this particular time in this country's history, he's a loser.
Right.
You know, now look, there's still the chance that he can win based on the fact that you know, the economy's not great and the American people are fickle and so on and so forth. But when it comes to, you know, is he a good candidate? He is absolutely not a good candidate. He's the worst possible candidate for the Republicans right now. Period.
It's astonishing that they chose this guy.
They didn't have a choice. What were their other choices? Seriously.
That's well, I mean, they could have chosen a fire breathing red meat hurling wingnut like Rick Santorum, or hell, even Newt Gingrich.
Well, they felt like Romney was the safest choice.
Yeah, it's just it's the irony of it is because he's not. He's the worst choice. Just looking at everything that happened throughout the course of 2011, and then going back to everything that happened leading up to the recession. Why don't we just go ahead and pick a guy who represents all of those terrible things? Why don't we pick a guy who, you know, made his bones by outsourcing jobs overseas and taking advantage of tax loopholes and just accumulating massive amounts of wealth by shaving the corners off of what we would consider to be, you know, savory business practices.
Right.
And he just, he did all of that. All of it.
Right. And his argument will be, I mean, unless something really heinous comes out, his argument will be, well, I didn't break the law. Yeah. I just followed, you know, all the tax code loopholes, every single one of them that I could. Everything that was available to me and probably not available to the average person. I exploited that 110%.
Yeah, he didn't break any laws that we know of. Although Swiss bank accounts, you know, are right on the periphery of
well,
what's legal and illegal.
There's a difference between flat out illegal and just plain unethical.
Yeah. And there was one theory, speaking of the Swiss bank accounts, that the reason he hasn't released some of these tax returns is he's working on this, you know, they've got this amnesty program where if you reveal your Swiss bank accounts, you, I think you either pay no tax, or you don't have to pay a penalty on the taxes that you evaded.
Yeah.
Or even if it is a penalty, there's a minor penalty. So he might be actually working on getting himself through that amnesty program, and which is another theory as to why he's not releasing the tax returns. But I think the main one is, you know, I think a lot of those tax returns is going to show a very, very small effective tax rate, if not zero taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, the one that he released from 2010, he paid an effective tax rate of 13.9% on more than $20 million in income. I mean, that's basically 13.9% is in the range for a married couple filing jointly, earning, I don't know what's the number, $30,000 to $70,000. That's the marginal tax rate. That's like 15% or so.
Stewart had the best comment about that, where he said, you know, releasing the past couple of years in taxes when you knew you were going to run for president is not a big deal. That's not what people want to see. They want to see the years that you figured, you know, that you weren't sure whether or not you were going to run for president.
Right.
Because that's the stuff that's going to be telling. Stewart's line was, it would be like Keith Richards releasing a autobiography called Keith Richards, My Time as a Movie Pirate.
Right. That's exactly. Oh, that's so great. That's so great. There's this very small. And again, it plays into everything the Obama administration and the Obama campaign have been talking about since they really started. This whole idea of the Buffett rule and getting the wealthiest Americans, the wealthiest 1%, to pay their fair share, not to be paying certainly an effective tax rate that's lower than their secretaries is how the line goes. And then you've got the whole 99% versus the 1%, the Occupy Wall Street movement. And so yeah, all of it just shows that this guy is the enemy. I mean, really, he's the enemy that has been defined, God, since 2007, really. Since we started talking about the causes for the recession and Reaganomics and all of the things, the deregulatory, low tax, elevate the rich, stagnant middle class wage kind of issues that have sunk us into the current problem that, you know, we're desperately trying to extricate ourselves from. You know, even John McCain avoided this guy like a plague in 2008.
Yeah.
In fact, thought Sarah Palin was more qualified. You know, he took.
Well, that was an opportunistic choice,
right? So it took one look at the Romney opposition research, and said, "You know, I don't want to get anywhere near those tax returns."
Yeah, the economy had just crashed.
Yeah. So, and then you have Bain Capital, which, you know, is involved with all of the, you know, legal yet ethically nefarious things that, you know, we've grown to hate about corporations. Going all the way down the list to aborted fetus disposal.
Yeah, I saw you write something about that. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, well, they invested.
Well, because I've been up to my ass in work for the past like 2 weeks.
Well, they invested in a waste disposal, medical waste disposal company that also disposed of aborted fetuses.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I hear Tyler Durden uses the leftovers to make soap.
But these are the sorts of things that that Romney kind of represents. Just a blind, you know, I mean, I know people who are I mean, vocally anti-smoking, but yet they have money invested in companies like Altria. You know, they just there's a separation there. There's what we believe, and then what we invest in, and what we get our money into, in order to make a profit. And they're two very separate and distinct things. And that's how, I mean, that's why we see such awfulness in the corporate world, because they have been able to shut off CEOs, investors, boards of directors. They've been able to shut off their Jiminy Crickets, their ability to kind of mesh what they believe is personally ethical with what will be a good bottom line.
Of course.
So they don't care if it means, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody does that to some extent. You know, didn't we have this conversation already? You know, how far would you go? How far would you sell out your beliefs?
Yeah. Well, we did have that discussion, but I mean,
yeah, you know, what to you is, because human beings can rationalize all kinds of insane behavior.
Yeah. Well, it's I think magnified times a gazillion when we're talking about multinational and mega corporations and investment capital firms and the like. You know, these are companies that really don't care if there's something ethnically awkward about what they're doing. They don't care if company X that they've invested in or actually hostily taken over is outsourcing all of their clothing to Chinese sweatshops.
Sure, because it's all about the bottom line, and they're making money for shareholders, and they're making money for themselves.
Of course.
Corporations exist to make money. And technically, there's nothing wrong with making money. Of course there isn't. You know, and I don't think success should be trashed. But there is something absolutely wrong when you do it at the exclusion of every single other consideration.
Yeah.
When it is the only consideration.
We got
because then people get hurt.
We got to take a short break. And when we come back, I completely forgot a couple announcements about the show right after this.
Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Well, when I first heard this song, this is a new Jack White song, Freedom of 21.
You are like a Jack White, like, you're a Jack White fanboy.
Oh, yeah. I don't disguise that at all.
Jack White annoys the crap out of me most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time.
He's a musical genius. I mean, the guy is just, he's could be the most versatile, the most creative songwriter and musician of our time.
Really? Then why the hell does everything he do sound? Why does everything he does sound exactly like Deuce does? God, I hate when I talk like that, and I can't figure out my conjugation.
What was that? What was that you said?
Just nothing. I'm just trying to speak through the hole in my mouth, and it's just not working today.
Everything he does sounds the same. Is that what you're saying? Everything he does sounds the same.
Everything he does. Thank you. I'll just take the do or does out of it. Yes, everything he does sounds the same.
You go to bobseska.com. And scroll down and look at the video I posted called Take Me With You. And it sounds nothing like anything he's ever done. And
right. So he has a song.
He has a song.
He's got that garage blues sound for almost everything. The Raconteurs were slightly different. They had like a little bit more of a poppy sound.
Yeah, and there was a very heavy guitar, like almost metal. The Dead Weather, that project.
Oh, Dead Weather? No, I mean, look, don't like I said, don't get me wrong. There's stuff from Jack White that I really like a lot, and I do not argue with his talent, but after a while, it's just like so much of his stuff does kind of sound alike to me, and I'm just like, all right, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can take him in doses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, any band is going to have sort of a style that they work with, but I think he's, as a songwriter and as someone who jumps from project to project to project, he's constantly exploring.
Now, he did a very good job producing Loretta Lynn's record. That was a damn good album.
Yeah, it is a really good album.
Yeah, from like almost 10 years ago. Unbelievably good record.
You know, I want to, but I forgot to mention at the top of the show, a couple of actually kind of important things to mention about the show itself, like show business.
Oh, well.
First of all, this is the 1 year anniversary of you and I doing the show together.
Is it really?
Yeah. It was actually.
Has it really been that long?
Well, technically it's, I think it's the 21st. I think that's when we did our first official show as the Bob and Chez Show.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I didn't even buy myself anything.
And I only knew that when I was going through and saving last week's show and looking at the files, and I noticed that the very first show that starts with the acronym BCS, Bob and Chez Show, was July 21st, 2011.
Cool.
So I said, oh, we're coming up on that. Because I'm terrible with anniversaries. I'm just, you know, this past week, we surpassed 15,000 posts on the blog. I didn't even notice. I just all of a sudden I look and it says 15,006, and I go, well, screw it, I missed that one.
I was good with like the fifth anniversary of the block of Deus Ex Malcontent, and I made a big, really big deal out of it, and did like a lot of back stuff and all that. And it's probably going to stop there, though. Like, I mean, I made it a point actually to say that from here on out, I'm probably not going to do a lot of sort of retrospective stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just don't. I'm not really into the self-congratulatory thing. I just can't. You know, it's nice to acknowledge that we've made it this far, and we've done this show together for a year now, probably with minimal interruption. I think we maybe missed 3 weeks in the last year of shows, and so yeah. I think that's pretty good. I think that's notable. And
that's not
knowing,
a bad record.
Knowing, of course, how lots of podcasts come and go, and you know, start up and then people lose interest and they fade away. But
I would like to know why you refuse to sleep with me anymore.
It's just we're out of that honeymoon period.
I know. We just don't have sex anymore.
And the other show.
I still want to be your little Thai boy who like throws firecrackers while you're standing around in a bathrobe listening to Sister Christian.
That's Cosmo. He's Chinese.
That's right.
So today, no clips of previous shows and no tuxedos and all that happy crappy.
Damn it.
Just doing the show. And speaking of the show, next week, there actually will be a show next Thursday. There'll also be an after party next Thursday, the 26th.
Okay.
Because when I was saying last week that there won't be a show on the 26th, I didn't realize that my flight for vacation doesn't leave until 10:45 that night. So we'll easily be able to record a show that afternoon.
Okay.
And get it posted and the after party posted for the next day. So that's no problem. But there will not be a show the week of the 2nd. Like the August 2nd, we're supposed to do a show. No show that day. And then gotcha. We'll be back a week after. There'll be a show next Thursday, no show the following Thursday, and then back the Thursday after that with new shows. So there. All that business is taken care of. I feel
excellent. Thank God. Housekeeping's over.
I feel cleansed. But getting back to Mitt Romney, this is a brilliant strategy by the Obama campaign. Because you know what it does? For once, a Democratic campaign is seizing the initiative on attacking an opposing candidate based on their strengths. So this guy has, I mean, Mitt Romney's one thing is that he's got experience in the private sector. Everything else is, I'm just not President Obama, so vote for me. But if he's got one thing to ballyhoo, it's, I've got experience in the private sector, in his uncanny valley voice.
Right. What is it? A lemon wet good?
Lemon wet good. Experience, private sector. Money, cash. Bane. But this is the one thing that he's got lots of experience with, and he can kind of toot his own horn on that. And the Obama campaign is going right after it, and the campaign is neutralizing that tactic from the Romney campaign. It's disallowing him to mention his experience in the private sector. It's besmirching it and making it toxic.
I hate you for using that word.
Why? You don't like besmirching?
Besmirching.
Besmirching. He's poisoning the ability to talk about his experience in the private sector.
Right.
And that is fantastic. That is fantastic. So anytime Mitt Romney wants to say, well, I have fantastic experience in the private sector and I've done all sorts of great things, blah, blah, blah. You can't do it. Someone brings up Bain. So why haven't you released your tax returns to show us whether or not you were CEO of Bain when you said you weren't? Well, I, blah, blah, blah. Lemon went good. So that's the Romney campaign conundrum, isn't it? And
it's good. I mean, they're doing to the Republicans for a change what the Republicans did to Kerry.
Yeah, and what the
hanging him with the one thing he thought was very noble about himself.
That's right. So whenever John Kerry brought up his military service in Vietnam, then there were questions about all the Swift boat attacks. Yeah. So it instantly, that strength, when discussed, transformed into an inevitable conversation about all the Swift boat attacks. You know, where was he? Did he really save those guys? Was he really running away when he was shot? Why did he throw his medals over the fence? All those things would come up. So he just couldn't do it anymore. He couldn't use that because they seized the initiative. With Barack Obama, they attacked him for his inherent Americanness, and they turned it into birtherism. I mean, Barack Obama has the quintessential American story. An immigrant parent, you know, a grandfather who fought in World War II with Patton's army, you know, rose from nothing, from basically poverty, to end up going to Occidental and Columbia and Harvard and become the editor of the Harvard Law Review and a state senator, a U.S. senator, president of the United States. That's a rags-to-riches story. And they made it difficult for him to really get into it without having to be on the defensive about, you know, where he was born and where his birth certificate was and all that crap. So finally, they're doing it to the Republicans, and I couldn't be more thrilled. But it might not be everything that, you know, needs to happen in order for him to win the election. And that's the other topic I want to get into this afternoon, which is the voter ID laws, which have been snuck in under the radar. And will absolutely, if Mitt Romney wins this election, it will totally be because of the voter ID laws. I don't know if you've been following that, Chez, but we're going to get into it in the next segment. And we're going to take a quick break for Bubble Genius. We'll be back right after this. The show is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best soap in the world, bath and body products, all natural, all vegan, independent, liberal business. You want to buy your stuff from them. Don't go to Bed Bath and whatever, or Walmart or Target or any of those companies. If you fancy yourself a real progressive, you buy your stuff from liberal, independent businesses that are good for the environment and make you smell really damn good. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Hey, man. Why so down in the dumps?
Life. She is a bitch.
Aw, what do you mean?
My special summer at the seashore. Soon I will have to go. How cruel. Oh, life, it is a bitch.
Dude, you're totally right. Life is a bitch.
Uh-huh. So you agree with me. Life is a beach.
But a different beach, man. I'm talking about a beach you can take home with you when vacation's over. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about cool summer stuff from our favorite bath and body shop, Bubble Genius.
But what is this beach you speak of?
It's true. Bubble Genius makes all kinds of cool beachy stuff, like Life's a Beach summer soap collection and salt scrub. That stuff rules. It softens summer skin and leaves you with the lightest scent of salty seashores. So even when the vacation's over, you can still be there.
Fantastico! So even when I leave, life will still be a beach.
Exactly, dude!
Quel fantastic. With Bubble Genius, my friend. Life is a beach!
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yeah, please do that. The more iTunes subscribers, the better we are on the higher our status is on iTunes. So yeah, you might download the show on the website, either one of our websites or through Stitcher or something like that. But also subscribe if you have iTunes. Subscribe on the iTunes. Maybe throw in some reviews on the iTunes page for the show. And that'll actually help us rise in the standings and the ratings on iTunes. And that gets more eyeballs looking at the show and listening to the show. But by the way, speaking of Bubble Genius, make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, and get 15% off your entire order from Bubble Genius. I don't know if you noticed, but the Republicans are running around. They have been for the last several years screeching about voter fraud. We got this serious issue, this really, really serious issue where voters are voting multiple times and Black Panthers standing outside of polling places in Philadelphia and, you know, dead people voting and dogs voting and mass hysteria.
Right.
And so this, because of this critical, critical issue, there has to be a reform in our voter registration process and how people go to the polling places and cast a ballot in this country. Because there's lots of people just scamming the system. And you know what? They're all Democrats. They're all brown people. And, you know,
people and the black. Those people.
Those people. And it all goes back. You remember, I think it was 2008. There was that. There were those two guys who were either part of the Black Panther Party or they were just dressed like Black Panthers just coincidentally. And they were standing in front of a polling place, and that became...
In Philadelphia.
That became, in a black neighborhood, that became a huge, huge mega issue for the right for some reason.
Yeah, Fox News flipped its freaking lid. I remember that very well.
The conspiracy theory was that they were working for the Obama campaign.
Right, and Eric Holder didn't prosecute them.
That's right.
And that proved the big conspiracy.
So they're all in on it. The Obama campaign was in on it. The Obama administration.
Right.
The Justice Department.
And it wasn't just that. It was, you know, the blacks looking out for each other.
That's right. So what comes along, what happens next is in upwards of 10 states, Republican lawmakers, Republican governors have passed voter ID laws where in order to cast a ballot in any election, you have to have a government issued photo ID. Now, that could be a driver's license or that could just be a state ID, which is just like a driver's license otherwise, other than the fact that it doesn't allow you to drive. It's just a form of identification issued by the government, which, by the way, you have to pay for. You have to pay to get one of those things. You know, it might only be $6 in some cases. But regardless, then you have to take off the time from work to go do it because these places aren't open on the weekends. You're not going to go to the DMV on a Saturday.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go during the week, which means you're going to have to miss work, lose wages. At the very least, I mean, you're not going to be able to do it over lunch. You ever go to the DMV, there's no way you're going to be able to get through a DMV line in 20 minutes. It's going to be, basically, your day is going to be shot. You go to stand in line to go get your driver's license. That even precludes the idea of getting trying to get past the test and require all of the various forms of ID you have to get in order to get a driver's license. Now, whether it's your birth certificate or a passport or social security card, all of those things, you have to have those at the ready in order to get a driver's license and to also get one of those government-issued non-driver's license photo IDs. In Mississippi, for example, in order to get a photo ID, you have to present a birth certificate. In order to get your birth certificate in Mississippi, you have to have a photo ID. So you want to talk about this is entirely 100% Jim Crow. This is a poll tax. And it's not just me saying it. Eric Holder, Attorney General, last week said it. I mean, the ACLU is saying it. Everyone who looks at this thing is, other than the Republicans, of course, acknowledge this for what it is. This is putting a price tag on the right to vote. You have to have the financial means in order to cast a ballot.
True.
And so this goes back to the whole Jim Crow era poll tax. You know, in the old days, when before the Voting Rights Act was passed by Lyndon Johnson, like 2 years before you and I were born or whatever. Before that, you know, there were all these states that had, you know, charges of, you know, a dollar or more in order to cast a ballot. Going back to the early 20th century, you know, being charged a dollar to cast a ballot, that was the equivalent of maybe upwards of $20 today. And right now, it costs even more than that in lost wages and actual fees paid to the government in order to get these IDs than it does to actually pay the poll tax from 100 years ago. And
right.
And what we also know is that one Republican from Pennsylvania actually admitted on the floor of the state house that they passed the photo ID law there, the voter ID law, in order to get Romney elected.
Yeah, and I mean, the interesting thing is the not-so-subtle implication is also that those who don't have the money to pay are not producing anything anyway, and therefore their vote really shouldn't matter. Secretly, and like I said, not so secretly, that's exactly what they think.
Right.
They really do think that if you can't come up with, you know, obviously they're trying to suppress regardless, but you know that somewhere in there the thinking is if you can't come up with however many dollars you need to get yourself a voter ID card, then you really shouldn't have a stake in the political process because you're not contributing anything.
We're going to get
you're a taker, not a maker.
We're going to get into it a little more after a quick break, back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
And we are back. Love this song. So voter ID.
You really, Yes's entire catalog, and you pick like one of the pretty much most average songs they've ever done.
Oh no, are you kidding me? This is a great song. I love that song. That's you know, actually Trevor Rabin wrote that song for Stevie Nicks. And evidently Stevie Nicks wrote different lyrics for it, but she was going to do it, and then they horked it back to put it on that album, the Big Generator album. It's a great song. I mean, it's a pop song. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not Roundabout, or it's not, you know.
I always liked Shoot High, Aim Low off that record.
Yeah, that's a good
song. The lyrics were ridiculous, but I like the music to it.
Well, my favorite song in that album is I'm Running, which is a weird, longer song, a more intricate song that almost has a salsa flavor to it. It's kind of weird. But anyway, so the voter ID laws that the Republicans are passing, because they insist that there are all kinds of voters just violating election laws and sneaking their way into polling places and, you know, I don't know what, spreading socialism to,
of course,
all corners of America. But the fact of the matter is that according to several studies, the voter fraud is almost non-existent. I mean, you could actually say statistically that it's non-existent. In an article called "The Myth of Voter Fraud" in U.S. News and World Report, you know, that really, really liberal magazine, Tova Wang, who's a progressive election law expert, said, "What we can go by is the number of times that people have been prosecuted successfully for voter fraud, and the number is ridiculously low. You have a better chance of being hit by lightning than discovering an incident of polling place fraud." So you say, well, that guy clearly is a progressive, and he's downplaying the problem because he's part of the conspiracy. But in 2007, after studying the problem for 5 years, the George W. Bush Justice Department, headed up by Attorney General Michael Mukasey, determined that voter fraud was non-existent.
Tell me you're purposely mispronouncing his name.
I purposely mispronounced Michael.
Thank God.
Michael Mukasey. You think I really thought his last name was Mukasey?
Mukasey actually is a pretty good word, though. I like that. your last name's an adjective.
they determined that voter fraud was non-existent. It just doesn't exist. So why are the Republicans doing this? Well, the answer, again, is obvious. And then when Eric Holder reveals that obvious answer and says that this is a poll tax and what they're trying to do is keep the elderly and minorities, low-income voters who traditionally vote Democratic, keep them away from the polling places, keep them from voting. And when he says that, everyone goes nuts. The far right goes bananas. Rick Perry starts to say, why are they always bringing race into it? They must be racist themselves. Why are they seeing? Why is race there? And this is a traditional Republican attack. This is how they work things. They do something that is obviously racially driven, and then when someone notices, they go, "Why are you looking at race?" You know, when you show a darkened photograph of Willie Horton after discussing how he was released and raped white women, and you say, "Well, that's kind of racist. That's a racist Southern strategy." Well, I don't see race there. Why do you see race?
Well,
you must be the racist.
We talked about this. That's it exactly. Their attitude is, as long as they don't come right out and say the word nigger, then it's not racism. And it's great because it gives them something to poo-poo. You know, when someone actually does say that, they can say, "Oh, we're disgusted by that.
Yeah,
well, we don't tolerate that."
this woman named Bea Buchler, 94 years old. This is from NPR. Lives in Devon, Pennsylvania. Has been voting since 1936 in every election, ostensibly. And now, suddenly, she needs to get her walker and travel more than 10 miles and stand in line to get a photo ID in order to cast a ballot. You know, there's countless stories of this. The Brennan Center for Justice released a report the other day about the impact of voter ID laws. Reports say birth certificates can cost $8 and $25. Marriage licenses required in some states for married women whose birth certificates include a maiden name can cost between $8 and $20. By comparison, the notorious poll tax outlawed during the civil rights era cost $10.64 in current dollars, the report states. Mm. So, like, for example, in Hawaii here, in order to get a driver's license here, if you're a woman, you not only have to produce your birth certificate, your actual certified piece of paper, but you also have to, if you've been married and you took your husband's name, you have to produce an actual marriage certificate issued by the Register of Wills or whatever, wherever you were married. So you have to get those two things in order in order to get a driver's license. And like I said, in Mississippi, they've got this ridiculous circuitous thing where you need a photo ID to get a birth certificate, but you need a birth certificate in order to get a photo ID. But nearly 500, this is according to this study, nearly 500,000 eligible votes without cards do not have access to a vehicle, or voters without cards do not have access to a vehicle. And many live in rural areas without public transportation access. 1.2 million black voters and 500,000 eligible Hispanics live more than 10 miles from state offices issuing free IDs. People of color are more likely to be disenfranchised by these laws since they are less likely to have a photo ID than the general population. Nearly 5 million people, 5 million, not just people, 5 million registered voters are going to be hindered from voting because of this law. And who do you think that's going to hurt the most in November? Certainly not the Republicans. It's going to be minority voters who vote Democratic, who want to vote for President Obama. They're not going to be able to do it.
But that's because they want more free stuff from the government because they don't have enough money to go out and, you know, buy a voter ID card.
Yeah, moochers.
That's right.
Moochers. The Republicans who hate bureaucracy are the same ones who are actually adding to the bureaucracy in order to vote. I mean, imagine the hoops that you have to jump through. If you don't have a photo ID and you want to vote in November and say, you know, most of us, you get to 40, 50 years old, who the hell knows where their birth certificate is? I used to have the actual paper birth certificate that was issued by the hospital when I was born. And then that somehow got lost. And so then I had to contact the hospital where I was born. I don't know, it was maybe 15, 20 years ago, in order to get a new copy of my birth certificate. So they sent me a new copy. Now that one's lost. I don't know where the hell that one is. Well, I do, but I don't want to get into why it's no longer in my possession. Suffice to say, if I hadn't gotten in before the March 2012 deadline here in Hawaii, I never would have gotten my driver's license. I would have had to go through all of those machinations in order to get it. So, yeah. You know, and I have means, you know, I have access to computers and I have access to this information. I'm kind of, researching it and learning about it. A lot of people don't even know that it exists. So they're going to get to the polling place in November or the primary coming up. And they're going to be screwed because they're going to be turned away at the polling. Well, what? I need what? How can I get one now? No. What do I do? How do I vote? Well, sorry, you can't vote because you don't have a photo ID, which you were somehow supposed to know about while you were working three jobs and raising a family of five. It's just absurd. I mean, the process of voting is supposed to be the easiest thing in the world. You should be, I mean, certainly, you know, there has to be a registration process. You know, you register to vote and you go up and you sign the book. And if it's your signature matches the signature that was there when you registered, then you go in and you vote.
Right.
And, you know, they should spread it out over several days. They should have early voting. They should have weekend voting. Make it as simple as possible. But they're, I mean, that's what they're not doing. They're making it increasingly difficult, and they're ignoring the real problem at polling places, which are these black box electronic voting machines outsourced to private companies like Diebold. Like Wally O'Dell famously in 2003 said, we're going to do our best to deliver Ohio to George W. Bush, to the president at the time.
Mm.
That was Wally O'Dell, the CEO and president of Diebold, manufactures all sorts of electronic voting machines. There's no paper trail, no way of tallying the votes
physically.
It's all electronic. So that's this. And there hasn't been any laws about that passed. You know, we're still, I mean, maybe what they got rid of is the stupid butterfly ballot that we saw in 2000. But for the most part, it's a lot of mystery and a lot of hindrances, you know, towards the process of voting.
That's not a surprise, though. I mean, it really isn't. Like you said, they've been ramping up to this for years.
Oh, you know what I almost forgot? We were talking about Bain.
Mm.
Talking about Bain Capital before.
Yes.
You know, it would be crazy for us to go through a show and to not talk about this.
Have you heard...
Just don't.
Oh. This new movie, the Batman movie, what is the Dark Knight Lights Up or something? Whatever the name of it is. That's right. Dark Knight Rises, Lights Up, same thing. Do you know the name of the villain in this movie?
Drink.
Bane. The villain in The Dark Knight Rises is named Bane. B-A-N-E. What is the name of the venture capital firm that Romney ran and around which there's now this make-believe controversy? Bane.
Stop.
The movie has been in the works for a long time. The release date's been known. Summer 2012 for a long time. Do you think that it is accidental that the name of the really vicious, fire-breathing, four-eyed, whatever it is, villain in this movie is named Bane?
Do you know, in the movie Blazing Saddles, there is a villain called Mr. Taggart. And did you also know that Mitt Romney's oldest son's name is Taggart? Do you think this is a little Hollywood?
I really love it when you do the D'Onofrio and Men in Black voice.
What's up, Farmer John?
Oh, a man came in here earlier. A dead man.
And that means what to me?
He was a very dear friend of mine. I believe he had an animal with him. It was a gift I gave him. A pet cat. It means worlds to me. I'd like to have it back.
Okay, I'm going to need a picture ID, written proof of ownership of the cat, notarized proof of kinship with the deceased.
Don't do that.
And that's just great.
That's totally what he sounds like. That's, and you notice...
The best part about my reaction to that when you first started to play it, it was like that Family Guy episode where Peter keeps singing Bird's the Word. And Stewie somehow talks, or no, Brian accidentally gets him to do it. And Stewie's just like, no, don't. Seriously, I put it up the other day, and I said, I'm like, you know, now you get to tell your grandkids. There it is at long last. Seriously, the single dumbest thing ever said by a human being in the history of mankind. That is the stupidest freaking thing I have ever heard.
And the day after, he tried to walk it back.
You know, that he couldn't.
And that's what they always do. They kind of present these ridiculous, ridiculous statements in the form of a question. You know, it's a Fox News Channel does it all the time with their lower thirds.
Right. And question mark on a lower third.
That's right. They're making a statement, but there's a question mark. Like the pollution thing, like pollution's got what plants crave.
Mm-hmm.
That was presented as a question mark in that screen grab I posted on the blog.
Of course it was.
Yeah. 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 Does pollution help plants grow? Question
no, of
mark?
Course it doesn't. No, you know, it's funny. I used to work with a guy who, obviously, especially during sweeps, you get those kinds of teases all the time, especially out of local news. You know, is there something in your underwear drawer that can kill you? You know, I mean, like, especially the 4-second IDs are the best. Is this the end of religion? Honestly, that's it. They've got I used to love 4-second IDs because you got to get so creative with them. You have to ask one freaking stupid question. But yeah, just I used to work with a guy who said, he's like, one of these days when they toss out to me for one of these incredibly dumb stories, the story he was talking about in particular was that he had to do a story on men getting pregnant. On, so, you know, it was definitely a sweep story. It was local news on you know, a new medical breakthrough that will it lead to pregnancy for men? And he says, like, I'm just going to sit there. I'm going to sit there in front of the camera. And when the anchor tosses to me and says, what do you say, Carlos? Can men get pregnant? I'm just going to answer, no, of course not, they can't. Back to you.
Last week, I almost missed an F-bomb.
Did you really, for me?
I almost did.
There have been two at least, and, I think, so far this show.
You know, what I try to do, yeah, and I think I've marked both of them. And usually that's what I do. I open up Sony SoundForge here, which I use to record the show, and then I hit the M button, which actually makes a little mark on the file where I can go in and then bleep it. But I almost missed the one. I actually posted the uncensored file. I mean, posted it on the blog.
That's
and on
right.
iTunes.
I saw that last week.
And then I had to revise it. I had to bleep it and then post it.
I don't mean to make your job more difficult.
Oh, it's okay.
Have you seen this, the Ann Romney, you people comment?
Oh, right? Yeah.
We've given all you people need to know. And I love that they're calling it a gaffe. That's my favorite thing when it comes to when someone like Ann Romney, Mitt Romney, make these kinds of statements that are clear, perfectly crystal clear, transparent windows into their psyches and the way they think. Yeah. And they call it a gaffe. It's not a gaffe. It's not a freaking gaffe. It's all they're doing is showing you exactly how they think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've given all you people, all you little people, the things you need to learn about us, and we'll give you no more.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. All you people. I mean, they are inundated by the commoners.
Yeah.
They are just, they're so tired of having to answer questions from us.
Yeah.
How dare we?
Well, you know.
And then I love the follow-up comment, which is basically that he gives 10% of his money to the church. And she actually said, would someone like that, you know, would he be a liar, someone you can't trust, blah, 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 that sort of thing. It's like, well, first of all, he gives money to the church because he has to.
Yeah.
You know, he had, according to the Mormon church, you have to.
Yeah.
First off. Secondly, no, I do not equate your willingness to grab onto insane religious beliefs with making you a good person.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, it's been a banner week for the Romney campaign. I mean,
between the Bain
stuff and the tax returns and then Ann Romney's thing today with, oh, yes, Gilligan, can you come over here and fix me a drink, please? And it's just like this Thurston Howell the Third kind of attitude, which is just, it's not helping. Certainly not helping in this context, especially. And then John Sununu with the ridiculous, the president isn't a real American. And then Romney said something about the president's point of view being inherently foreign. This is a guy with offshore bank accounts hiding his money from, you know, government tax returns. And John Sununu, meanwhile, was born in Havana, Cuba.
There you go.
His one parent was Salvadoran, and then I think his other parent was Israeli or something. And he's going around, I don't need to go into it anymore. You kind of get the idea of the hypocrisy there. I just wanted to note here at the end of the show. I don't know how you feel about this, Chez, because I know it's sort of, I don't know, some progressives kind of dig this. I don't trust it. The McCain speech about Michelle Bachmann's conspiracy theory with regards to Hillary Clinton does not absolve him whatsoever.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't absolve him. It's a fine thing to say. In fact, I think it's interesting to think that you know, kind of like the Chris Rock bit about how I can't really say it, but about how certain people are always wanting credit for what they're supposed to do. That was how the bit went. That's sort of what McCain is doing right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, you don't get credit because you stood up to a woman who's completely insane and is making spurious allegations and is just, bat crap crazy. You know, you don't get points for calling her out for that. That should be second nature.
Especially when you're moving on to filibuster everything the Obama administration tries to do after you almost plagued us with Vice President Sarah Palin.
I mean, good. I'm glad he said it. But you don't get brownie points for that. That's what you should be saying.
That's right. Everything we didn't get to on the show today, we'll do on the after party tomorrow. Take care, everybody.